name is Ashlyn Clota, and welcome to my podcast. Today we'll be discussing how one family dish represents thousands of years of history, but also issues in our present-day society. Let's dive in. It was in the spring of 1907 that my great-grandparents, Dominica and Jerome Gilombardo, first stepped foot on American soil. In search of a better life, they escaped Sicilian poverty at the young age of 17 and pursued musical careers in the United States' very own cultural melting pot, New York City. Fast forward 20 years later, they pursued their passions and their lives were completely changed. My great-grandfather had become the leader of a successful symphony orchestra, my great-grandmother was cooking her authentic Italian recipes for the masses, and together they raised a family of 10 children. My great-grandparents had an incredible influence on our family by passing down their stories, their religion, their language, and my personal favorite, their food. I spent the majority of my childhood in the kitchen with my mother and grandmother, cooking Italian recipes that had been passed down in our family for generations. Although we made and ate dozens of dishes, one quickly grew a special place in my heart, chicken cacciatore. Although there are several versions of the dish, the chicken cacciatore that has always been prepared in my home consists of five key ingredients: chicken thighs, tomato sauce, extra virgin olive oil, Kalamata olives, and egg noodles. Other adaptations of the recipe tend to include extra ingredients such as mushrooms, celery, onions, peppers, carrots, and a lot more. The meal's origins can actually be traced back to the beginnings of the Renaissance period in Italy. The term cacciatore directly translates to mean hunter in English. Interestingly enough, the famous chicken dish was oftentimes made using rabbit. While tracking herds of larger animals for several days at a time, hunters would concoct simple stew with wild game, typically rabbit, and easily accessible spices such as parsley and oregano. What I find extremely interesting about chicken cacciatore is that there are so many different versions of the recipe as a result of its roots. Since the dish was up to the discretion of the hunter and his family, based on their preferences and what ingredients were available to them at the time, there was an endless amount of potential recipes for the same exact dish. Surprisingly enough, the second most widely known and traditional ingredient to the recipe, tomato sauce, was not introduced into the mix until much later in history. Tomatoes didn't reach Europe until they were brought back from the New World in the 16th century. So authentic chicken cacciatore actually uses a wine-based sauce that differs based on one's geographic location within the country. Northern Italians tend to use white wine in their sauce, while Southern Italians tend to use red. Wine-based sauce isn't the only food item that divides the northern and southern regions of Italy. The two areas actually have very different styles and preferences when it comes to Italian cuisine. But don't worry, the Italian people are still united by their undying love for their pizza and their tortellini dishes. Southern Italian food is characterized by its strong Mediterranean influence. The region places a heavy focus on the freshness of its seafood and vegetables, and utilizes its staple crops such as tomatoes, eggplant, olives, and peppers in the majority of its meals. The area's most beloved dishes consist of eggplant parmesan and Neapolitan margherita pizza. The most important attribute of Southern Italy's food scene is the culture's almost sole use of olive oil in its day-to-day cooking. Italy is the second largest producer of olive oil in the world. The state produces an average amount of 555,000 tons a year, 80% of which is made in southern Italy. This is mainly due to the fact that the olive tree was originally brought to Sicily by the Phoenicians, followed by the Greeks, in the 7th to 8th centuries BC, and it thrived there because of the region's prime environmental conditions. Additionally, Italy is also the world's leader in olive oil consumption, averaging roughly 650,000 tons annually. If you do the math, the country consumes more olive oil than it creates, thus resulting in the country importing more than 500,000 tons a year. Now that's a lot of olive oil. Surprisingly, the native people of northern Italy don't tend to use much olive oil when it comes to cooking. The region is characterized by a lesser use of olive oil, tomatoes, and pasta, but it makes up for it with substantially more butter, rice, corn, and cheeses in its dishes. This is due to the fact that northern Italy is distinguished by its mountainous terrain and is landlocked by its neighbors Austria, Switzerland, and France. Northern Italians love their land and take advantage of it to the fullest extent. They utilize it by raising cattle, sheep, and goats that provide them with milk, butter, cheese, and meat. This contrast in regional preferences directly correlates to the differences in the makeup of sauces across chicken cacciatore recipes. Besides the divergence of the usage of red wine in southern Italy versus the usage of white wine in northern Italy, another main variation of the recipe is a discrepancy of cream-based sauce versus tomato-based sauce. The recipes with creamy sauce tend to come from northern Italy, due to its specialization in the dairy industry, while tomato sauce recipes tend to come from southern Italy, because it's one of the region's staple crops. So let's dive into the economic side of our key ingredient. As we've learned through exploring a plethora of variations of the recipe, almost every ingredient of chicken cacciatore can be removed, altered, or replaced. Well, every ingredient but the most important one, the chicken. The poultry industry is incredibly popular and profitable in the United States. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, over 9 billion chickens were produced in 2018 alone. The U.S. poultry industry provides roughly 1.2 million jobs, $68 billion in wages, $313 billion in economic activity, and $24 billion in government revenue. Although the chicken production industry provides employment and revenue to the American people, there are several prevalent issues in the process that affect both the consumers and the animals. For the purpose of being relevant to chicken cacciatore, we're going to focus on broiler chickens, chickens raised specifically for the purpose of meat production. First and foremost, one of the most controversial aspects of the poultry production industry in the United States is the welfare of the animals. According to PETA, broiler chickens are prepared for production after they reach their slaughter weight at about 6 weeks old. Chickens that are not raised for the purpose of consumption traditionally take twice as long to reach this weight. Contrary to some of the fears of the American public, poultry experts say that growth hormones aren't the explanation for rapid growth rates. This phenomenon, along with the larger size of broiler chickens over the year, is due to selective breeding. As a result of the increased body mass of the chickens, they're oftentimes unable to support their own weight and suffer from leg weakness and joint problems. But the benefits of selective breeding to the poultry industry are efficient feed conversions and stronger immune systems that are less susceptible to disease. Furthermore, poultry specialists elaborate that the process of feeding or injecting broiler chickens with growth hormones is illegal in the United States. And even if they were able to do so, assuming that the method was legal, the cost would outweigh the value of the chicken. In addition to the rapid growth rates of the broiler chickens, the animals tend to spend the entirety of their mere 6 weeks of life surviving in extremely poor environmental conditions. Broiler chickens are often raised in groups of roughly 20,000 in a shed with little to no natural light, with nothing but food and water. As a result of the inadequate lighting, the chickens tend to develop eye abnormalities. Additionally, the temperature inside of a containment unit is rarely regulated as well as it should be, sometimes leaving the birds in extreme heat during the summer or extreme cold in the winter months. If the ventilation systems fail during the summer months, up to thousands of broiler chickens could die in just a few hours. Furthermore, chickens are highly social creatures that thrive in smaller groups. When forced to live in excessively large and unnatural population sizes, they're unable to form a social structure, aka their pecking order. Consequently, aggravated chickens often take out their frustrations on one another via pecking, and which frequently results in several injuries and deaths among the chickens. Moreover, the floors of these broiler chicken sheds are often lined with litter to absorb the animals' excrements, but aren't actually cleaned until all of the broiler chickens are removed from the area for slaughter. After the feces of 20,000 chickens builds up for 6 weeks, the air in the broiler shed often becomes highly polluted with ammonia, resulting in severe damage to the animal's eyes and respiratory systems. Similarly, direct contact with the litter may leave the birds with painful hawk burns on their legs and feet. So now, let's dive into my policy recommendation for this matter. The poultry industry gives a tremendous boost to the United States economy, provides competitive wages to over 1 million Americans, and supports the day-to-day diets of an overwhelming portion of our citizens. The sector has contributed an abundance of economic and cultural benefits to our modern society. But at exactly what cost? At this point, it's not a question of whether or not we believe the treatment of these animals is humane. From looking at the facts, we know that it isn't. So why do we continue to support these practices, even when we know what's secretly going on behind the scenes? As someone who is a strong supporter of animal rights, and also as someone who eats meat on a daily basis, I know from experience that it's easy to turn a blind eye and not acknowledge what we all know is going on. It's simpler to enjoy my chicken cacciatore and not think about where it came from. It's much simpler, but that doesn't mean that it's right. I'm not saying that America needs to give up meat, but I am saying that we need to find a better way to process and produce it. The United States as a whole needs to shift to organically produced chicken. Organic chicken farmers are required to follow USDA National Organic Program rules when raising the animals. These rules include protocols requiring the farmers to allow annual third-party inspection and the chickens to be provided with organic food, have access to pasture, and not be given any kind of antibiotics. Organic chicken is the healthier, smarter, and more humane choice, but unfortunately, it does come at a cost. In this day and age, organically raised chicken sometimes costs almost twice the price as regularly processed chicken. For example, Trader Joe's organic chicken is priced at $2.69 per pound, compared to a generic store brand chicken that's priced at $1.50 per pound. Considering this, my policy recommendation is for the United States government to impose stricter animal rights laws on the poultry industry and move towards subsidizing organic chicken production. I'm aware that we can't magically drastically change one of the most profitable economic sectors of our country overnight, but in the years to come, we can implement steps toward achieving what's right. The first changes need to be imposing basic regulations on large-scale broiler chicken production. These animals need to be treated more humanely. This means raising them in better conditions and smaller population sizes, and allowing them the full amount of time they need to grow. Next, the United States government needs to incentivize organic chicken production by providing subsidies to the poultry industry. We need to make the humane treatment of animals more affordable to those running the industries and those who are purchasing their products. Finally, we eventually need to make organic chicken farming the standard and enforce it by law. As a country, we need to recognize that we have a tremendous responsibility as consumers to hold our food industry to higher moral standards. Especially at a time when our world has been utterly shocked by the spread of a zoonotic disease, the cleanliness of our food supply needs to be our top priority. We need to love and cherish our traditional recipes, our family chicken cacciatores, but we need to do so in a way that treats our planet with kindness. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I hope I've given you a little bit to think about and hopefully act upon.